On 88.1 WIPR, I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. You know, after a long day at work, a lot of folks just don't feel like cooking an elaborate dinner. Sometimes it's just easier to dump some stuff in a pot and let her rip. The big question, what exactly should we be dumping? On today's installment of Whatcha Got Cookin', our resident foodies John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant and Sasha Wollhandler of Sasha's 527 join me with tips on one-pot wonders. So, what you got cookin'? You have a go-to lasagna dish, a favorite stew or soup? Let's share some recipes for crockpots and Dutch ovens and whatever your favorite pot is. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick talks to producer Susan Rose about motherhood out loud at the Vagabond Players. That's all coming up next on Midday. First, the news. Good afternoon, everybody. It's midday. Time now for What You Got Cookin'. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you are with us. On our What You Got Cookin' segments, we talk about recipes and food trends and traditions and general good eats with our two resident foodies, John Shields and Sasha Wollhandler. John's a chef. He's an author and the owner of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. He's also the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. And he joins us today on the line from Chicago. Afternoon, John. How you doing?
Good, Tom. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. And you are in Chicago because your father-in-law passed away and you're there for the funeral. So our love to John Gilligan and your family in this sad time for you. And we very much appreciate your taking a little time out of your day to be with us. So thanks.
Well, thanks so much, Tom. We appreciate it.
And Sasha Wollhandler is here with me in Studio A. She and her husband, Steve Susser, run Sasha's 527 restaurant and catering in the Mount Vernon neighborhood of Charm City. Hey, Sasha, how you doing?
Great, Tom. Hey, John, send kisses to you.
Hey, Sasha.
And, you know, today we're going to talk about something that is really a very practical thing for a lot of folks. You know, after a long day of work, sometimes you just don't feel like cooking an elaborate meal. So we're going to talk about some relatively quick, tasty one-pot meal recipes, one-pot wonders, we might want to call them. You are welcome to join us with your favorite recipes for things you can sort of throw into one pot and turn on the stove or the oven and, you know, set it and forget it, as Ron Popeil used to say. 410-662-8780 is our number here for What You Got Cooking. Our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Sash, the advantages of one pots are,
well,
numerous,
duh.
Are they not?
Duh. Let's just face it. Minimal cleanup. I mean, I think it's great. Secondly, it's a great way to clean out the refrigerator. All those vegetables that you bought at the farmer's market or wherever, and they're suddenly looking at you a little weak and need a little cheering up. I mean, it is a great way to put everything together. And there's nothing that screams comfort like a one pot. In the cold weather, it's marvelous to have. And in our society right now, which is a little stressed out and fractious, you know, whether you're right, left, Democrat, Republican, or independent, nothing like a one pot to feed 8 to 10 people easily, have everybody over with some big bread and a big bottle of wine, and a lot of comfort. Screams comfort. So there's a lot of reasons to do one pots.
It does. And John Shields, I mean, is there such thing as sort of gourmet one pots? I mean, are there things that you've ever included on your menu at Gertrude's or seen on menus of other, you know, good restaurants that are really just, you know, some chef is throwing in really cool stuff in one place?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, one pot is, you know, the original way of cooking, you know. So you can go from simple peasant food all the way up to gourmet food. I mean, you think about, you know, like a cassoulet. That could originally probably have been peasant food, but as you start adding the goose fat or the duck fat and all the wonderful sausages with the beans, it just becomes, you know, this amazing gourmet meal. Or a paella.
In Spain, right?
Gorgeous,
yeah.
Seafood with some rice and saffron. You can't get better, and it's all simple.
Yeah, and Sasha, when we talk about one pots, we're not actually talking always about physically a pot. I mean, sometimes we are, but, you know, a crock pot, for example, qualifies, right? I mean, there's all sorts of things that you can do one pot meals in.
Lots of people have crock pots, a big you want to make sure that the pot you're using is a pretty strong, has a strong heavy bottom, because you're going to be sauteing a lot of things in that bottom. Or a Dutch oven, which is one of those La Crusade things, something that can go from the top of the stove into the oven. There's, and you mentioned the slow cooker, there's also sheet pans. But to what John was saying before, I just wanted to, those of you that don't know about one pots and how to cook them, they are so easy. There's a really simple, quick procedure. It doesn't apply to all, but it applies to about 80 or 90%. What you're going to do is you're going to take a protein, whatever it might be. You're going to throw it in some flour. You're going to put a glug of olive oil in the bottom of your pot. You're going to saute that protein till it's brown. Take it out. Then you're going to put your vegetables. Usually it's the mirepoix of onions, celery, and carrots. That's our trilogy, but it might not be, but mostly it's that. But if you're going for an Asian style or Mediterranean, you'll definitely use that. It depends on what you're doing, but that usually goes in. And then all of your seasonings, of which we'll talk about, you saute that for another 8 minutes, so it's kind of softened. Put in a bunch of wine, put in a bunch of broth, throw it in the oven, and let it go, and you've got your one pot. I'm telling you, folks, it's easy.
And, John, you know, I was talking to my mom the other day, who's a wonderful cook. She's retired. She lives in Atlanta, and she was saying that she finds that she's got more energy in the morning than she does in the evening. She's very active. She's involved in all sorts of stuff. And she was saying, you know, it's better for me to get up in the morning and put the stuff in the pot then, because I'm a little more fired up. So she does that. You know, the other night she was telling me how she made in the crock pot butternut squash and apple and onion soup, which she put in the crock pot because she said, I had a full day. I was out doing all this stuff. And if I get back at 6 or 7 o'clock, I'm too tired to cook. So there's a practical notion of this as well in terms of when you're able to physically get dinner going, isn't there?
Absolutely. And it gives you so much, you know, different kind of variety and way that you can approach it. Let's say you're going to do it like your mom with the crock pot. Get that done first thing in the morning, and you don't have to worry about it again the rest of the day. Or if you're going to do one of the stovetop ones, you know, in the Dutch oven or whatever, you could still do that in the morning. And even before you're going out to lunch, it's done. And you can even reheat it later in the day. Has even more flavor by the time that you reheat it. But it can all be done at one time, and it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind, except you do smell, you know, the aroma all day. It just keeps the house smelling great.
Another extra added benefit. And, Sash, you know, when I'm sauteing things, you know, that I'm going to put over a pasta or a quinoa or something like that, I'm careful to saute first the things that take longer to cook, you know, so I'll start with an onion and maybe the carrots and celery then, and I won't put in the mushrooms or the zucchini or something until a little later, because they're not going to take me nearly as long to cook. Do you run into the danger of overcooking some of this stuff and undercooking other things?
I don't think when you have your onions and carrots and celery that you're going to overcook them. They are just there to give you that great flavor. And you're right, the last half hour is when you would put in your the things that don't take as long. I had a great Moroccan lamb, not the Moroccan lamb stew, Mediterranean lamb stew, where I sauteed all of the lamb first, and then I browned the carrots and the celery and the onion and put my garlic, thyme, and rosemary, but later, and let it cook for a couple of hours with some wine and some chicken stock. However, later, a half an hour before I wanted to serve it, I put in a can of white beans and a can of artichoke hearts and some sun-dried tomatoes. The beans were, of course, cooked already, and the artichoke hearts, so you just wanted to warm them. But it's a wonderful spring stew, and it looks beautiful for the spring. But I have a question for John or for anybody out there. I don't own a crock pot. I've always wanted one. For some reason, I'd never have done it. Do you think you can put your creuset pot in the oven at 200 and let that cook all day like a crock pot?
I don't know, John. Would that work?
It should. It should. You know, if you keep it at around 200 degrees, even maybe a little bit lower, It should work. I mean, doesn't seem to be any reason why not.
The physics of it, you know. I have a really good friend, Bill Smiley, who's a wonderful cook, and he did a tenderloin, a beef tenderloin, a week or so ago for about 20 of us, and he cooked it at 250 for a long time. I forget how long, but, you know, if we were doing a tenderloin, we would normally put it in the oven, you know, for a half hour, 45 minutes at something like 300 or 400, something like that. He had it at 250. He slow cooked it for most of the afternoon. It was delicious. It was incredible. Is there any, John Shields, is there any particular advantage to slow cooking something as opposed to quicker?
Well, you know, there are so many schools of thought with that, especially when you were talking about the tenderloin, that slow cooking actually, you know, it breaks it down a little bit more, makes it more tender. I think for any kind of, especially meat, one pot, like whether it's a stroganoff or an Irish stew, the crock pot is a great thing, because it takes so long and it really makes it moist and the meat just kind of falls apart. It's delicious.
Yeah, yeah. We got a couple of folks calling and I want to try to sneak them in before we get too involved here. Terry in Olney, welcome to Midday. What you got cooking with Sasha Wellhandler and John Shields?
Hey, I was calling about my mother.
Terry, I'm afraid we have a really bad connection, so why don't you hang up and call us back, and we're going to try to get back to you, but the phone just isn't working for us now, so we're going to hold off on you, but please hang up and give us a call. We'd like to talk about the recipe that you want to suggest. Let's go to John in Dundalk. John, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thanks. What's on
Good.
Your mind?
I just wanted to say one thing that my wife and I use quite regularly is a pressure cooker. For our one-pot meals, and they're done, you know, pretty quickly. And you talk about tender meat; it certainly does tenderize the meat.
Great. So, you know, I've never used a pressure cooker, John. Give me an example of how you put a meal together.
Well, basically, just brown your meat. Let's say you're making a pot roast; just brown the meat in a little oil, and then you throw in maybe 2 cups of liquid, which would be like a broth, beef broth, for instance, and then put your vegetables in, carrots, onions, and then I usually put the potatoes in later. And in about 20 minutes, you're ready to eat.
Wow.
You can even put a little roux in it and thicken it up. And, you know, it's very flavorful, and it's better the next day.
Yeah.
So if you make a lot, you can literally and eat as a leftover.
Oh, that's a great idea. Well, thanks for that suggestion, John. I appreciate it. Let's go back to Terry in Olney. Terry, I hope we got our telephone problems fixed.
I think it probably was on my end. I had you on speaker while I was listening to you. I have a recipe my mom made that was, I mean, I'm in the food industry. I eat pretty good food almost every day, but this just brings back such good memories. I made it the other day for me and my sister and my family. You just take pork chops and you brown them in the courgette, right? You saute some onions at the same time right in there. And then you just throw handfuls of rice in and pour in a little bit extra chicken stock. So you're cooking the rice in it, but you want to have extra in there because you're braising the pork chops. And use pork chops on the bone. I usually throw in a sprig of fresh rosemary and just cover it up and then let it go. And you cook it for pretty much as long as you want. I mean, it's not going to dry out. And then you take it out, and I can't describe how good that rice tastes. Mm. I mean, the pork chops are braised. They're super tender. It's just so fabulous. And there's a lot you can add to it and a lot you can do to it. You can add vegetables or whatnot. But just that kind of recipe is so easy to do, and it doesn't take any effort. And
yeah, it sounds delicious.
Restaurant quality.
And tell me, Terry, do you need to bring the chicken stock to a boil when you put the rice in, or do you let the chicken stock just sort of simmer away along with the pork chop?
It depends. So if I'm just doing it for a long braise and I'm really trying to infuse the flavor throughout, it doesn't even matter. I just throw it in there and I'll let the temperature of the oven bring it to a boil. This, you know, if I'm under the gun, I'll bring it to a boil first and then I'll put it in the oven. I think it was ready in a half hour.
Oh,
of course,
terrific.
It didn't have the full flavor, but it doesn't take forever to cook either.
Well, that's a terrific suggestion. Thank you so much for that call. I appreciate it. We're going to take a little break now. Sasha Wolhandler and her husband, Steve Susser, run Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering on Charles Street in Baltimore. She's here in the studio with me. John Shields and his husband, John Gilligan, run Gertrude's Restaurant at the BMA. John's also a television host and an author. He's in Chicago. We'll have more of What You Got Cooking when we return. 410-662-8780 for your favorite one-pot wonders. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @midday. Tom Hall. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the Intergalactic Broadcast, it's the Midday News Wrap. Award-winning journalist Alec McGillis. He just won a big Polk Award this week. He's from ProPublica. He'll join me along with Gene Marbella of the Baltimore Sun. We'll talk about this week's news and current events, and we'll take your calls and emails as we are taking them now. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about one-pot meals with our resident foodies John Shields and Sasha Wolhandler. John's a chef and an author. He's also the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on MPT and PBS. His restaurant, Gertrude's, is located at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Sasha Wolhandler and her husband, Steve Susser, run Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering on Charles Street in Mount Vernon here in Baltimore. If you'd like to get in on the act, 410-662-8780 is our phone number. midday@wypr.org is our email address. Our Twitter handle, @midday_Tom Hall. So, Sasha, let's talk about some of the flavor profiles that you can employ when you're using the crock pot or the Creuset or the Dutch oven, whatever.
Right. Well, earlier when we were talking about a procedure with one pot, you saute again your proteins, take it out, then put in your mirepoix vegetables, your onions, your garlic. But if you're going to go Asian style, you want to use ginger and garlic and soy and mirin and rice wine vinegar, some beef stock, some veggie stock, and then to top your little, say, Korean beef stew, if you made one, I brought you a little bit over there, you can put a chopping of cilantro and scallions. However, if your feeling is, as I told you earlier when I did the Mediterranean lamb, you would do garlic and oregano and basil and thyme. You could throw some capers in. So that takes you into the Mediterranean area, rosemary, of course. If you're going Mexicans, you've got that same protein, whatever you're using, the beef or the chicken, or if you're using pork, you're going to go with chili and cumin and coriander and a little cayenne and jalapeno and poblanos. Again, if you're going to go Moroccan, and there's some wonderful Moroccan tagines, John, I know you and I had talked about that the other day, and you'll do your ginger and garlic and coriander and cumin and red pepper and turmeric and cinnamon. These are great flavors, and they help to flavor and infuse that whole one pot with wonderful, wonderful source of taste. You will love them.
Sounds delicious. And John Shields, you have a favorite? I mean, are there things that you make for dinner at your house or for buddies and friends it's a go-to recipe, a go-to dish?
Well, actually, there is one, and it's kind of this crazy one. Years ago, I did some consulting for Williams-Sonoma when I was out in the West Coast, and I bought one of those Romatoff clay pots, the big clay pot.
Oh, yeah.
And I love it, and I still use it all the time. And they're the coolest things. You just kind of soak them in cold water for about 15 minutes, and I make this dish with chicken. It can either be a chicken that's cut up, or you can use a whole roasting chicken. And I make a whole layer of all kinds of vegetables on the bottom of it. I'll put potatoes and carrots and onions and leeks, just pile it up, maybe some turnips. And then I put the chicken pieces on there, some salt and pepper, and then some of the flavorings, like Sasha was talking about with the thyme and rosemary, a little bit of lemon juice, some garlic in there. And you put the chicken on top, put the top on it, and then you put it into a cold oven on the lower rack, and then turn it up to about 450, and it cooks in about an hour.
And including the time it takes for the oven to warm up to 450, you're talking about.
Yeah. And all the water that has been absorbed by the clay pot just comes out, and it makes the most amazing dish. I mean, I couldn't believe it. So it's one of these things. I get home and I don't feel like, now what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
I just throw that thing together, put it in the oven, and you take it out, and it's an amazing meal.
Oh, that sounds delicious. 410-662-8780 is our number here on What You Got Cooking. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Sash, when it comes to herbs, and you're adding herbs to stuff, I've found, for example, over the last many years now, when I roast vegetables, and then I'm going to, like if I'm roasting red potatoes and garlic or something, I want to put rosemary on those. So rather than put the rosemary on when I put the potatoes and garlic in the oven, I put the rosemary on when I take it out of the oven. So the herbs haven't actually been cooking with the potatoes and the garlic. I'm just basically putting fresh herbs on an already cooked thing, you know. Is that the right way to do it, do you think? I mean, I don't know.
If it works for you, Tom,
it does
work. It's the right way to do it. That's the.
But I wonder if you're throwing the herbs in, you know, in a crock pot in the morning and then cooking them all day, does it attenuate their flavor in any way?
I put the herbs in when I'm cooking it, mm-hmm. and let it cook through, because I think it really does permeate that flavor. And I use dried herbs. Now, as to your potatoes, I would put the rosemary in before. I toss mine with it and do it that way, or the
now,
last
so
5 minutes.
Do you cut them up? I mean, I have a friend.
The
Kimberly,
rosemary?
Kimberly Mackin is a wonderful cook friend of mine who, the way she does it is she just gets huge sprigs of rosemary and sticks it on top of the potatoes
and then puts
them in the oven.
I do
so
that.
She doesn't bother cleaning them and, you know, chopping them up and all that kind
I
of
do
stuff.
It both ways. And mm-hmm. I love, love, love rosemary. I just could take a bath in rosemary. I love it. I think, you know, basil you want to put on at the end, what you're just going to add at the end. There's a pasta dish there that was, I looked when figuring out what we were going to talk about with the one pots, I found, and I've heard people talk about this one pot pasta dish where you cook the,
yeah, this is
put
wild.
The dried,
it looks great.
Put the dried pasta, and I put some spinach in there, but it's dried pasta. And I'm telling you guys, everybody can make this, even if you never have cooked in your life. Get a pot. Put dried pasta in, put a can of tomatoes, put some water and vegetable broth, and you'll see on the internet, do one pot pasta, and a lot of garlic and a lot of chopped up onions, and cover it for 10 minutes. Put oregano, and I put some roasted red pepper, some red pepper flakes in it, oregano, and vegetable oil. I covered it for 10 minutes, stirred it a couple of times. It's
really good, John. I'm sitting here. I'm sorry, extra sorry that you're not here to enjoy this. But it's you would not think. I mean, that's the wildest thing I've ever heard.
10 minutes, everyone, you can do it.
Because it takes 10 minutes to boil pasta when you put it in boiling water. Sometimes,
and
this
even,
is like a vermicelli that Sasha's bought here. It's delicious.
And I even put a shrimp in there because in 10 minutes the shrimp will cook. So. I'm telling
you,
folks.
So everything starts, nothing is cooked when you put it in the water. You throw it in there, you turn it on.
Guys, go on the internet and look up one pot spaghetti or one pot fettuccine. For pasta purists, it's not going to be perfect. Are you a pasta purist, Tom? I mean, some pasta purists will say it's got too much starch in it. But I think for a quick meal and something you want to do in one pot and easy peasy, clean out your refrigerator. If it'll cook in 10 minutes, it can go in with that pasta. The key is a lot of garlic, a lot of flavor, salt and pepper and garlic and oregano, and then at the end, some crushed up basil.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm a purist. I'm nervous about being called a purist because I would never want to be in the opposite camp of the impurists. I'm naturally aligned with the impurists.
That's
so.
A whole other discussion.
that's another discussion.
That's a can of worms, and we're not going to open.
All right. John Shields is on the line with us from Chicago. Sasha Wohlhandler's here with me in Studio A. It's What You Got Cooking on Midday. 410-662-8780 is our number. midday@wypr.org is our email, and @MiddayTomHall is our Twitter handle. Let's go to Laura in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a Dutch oven emergency going on right now on my stove.
Well, you've called the right place.
Yes. So I'm making something, a recipe. It's spiced meatball, butternut, and tomato stew. And it calls for cilantro. I realized I have no cilantro. So I was wondering, so the meatballs have cumin, coriander, garlic, there's tomatoes, diced tomatoes, olive oil, butternut squash, and cauliflower that are the base of the stew. But I'm tasting it, and it's tasting a little thin, like, and garlic, of course. It's tasting a little thin. I'm wondering, do I need the cilantro, or can I substitute it with something?
All right, John, what do you think?
Well, I'm thinking some thyme would work in there. Because I don't like cooking anything long with cilantro anyway. I only use cilantro chopped and put on right at the end.
So cilantro is one of those ones that you want to hold out till the very end. So if you don't have cilantro, I mean, thyme seems like a really good substitute. Sasha, what comes to mind for you?
Fresh parsley would even work well with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even fresh basil. But none of those would really thicken your sauce. Because all of those would go on at the end as a garnish. It sounds delicious. What might thicken it is if you let it simmer a little uncovered, that sauce might reduce a little bit. And you can always make a roux, which is taking a little butter and flour and warming it up together so it makes a little bit of a paste, and let it cook a little bit in a sauté pan, like a couple of tablespoons of flour and a couple of tablespoons of butter. Cook it so the flour taste goes out, and then put some of the sauce into the sauté pan so that you've kind of gotten the flour paste mixed in with the sauce, and then add it to your pot, and that will thicken it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, thyme and roux. I'm on it.
Thyme and roux. Terrific. Well, thank you for calling, and remember, first rule, take a deep breath. And don't panic.
And also, second rule, does it call for any wine? Take a big gulp.
Yes. Don't waste it. Don't waste it on the dinner. Right. Okay. Good luck, Laura. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. How about Andrew in Sedonia? Welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Yeah, I cook with everything, pressure cookers, rice cookers, everything. But my favorite is a George Foreman grill.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what I do, my favorite recipe is a nice thick porgy or some sort of fish, meaty fish on that nature. And I like to wrap it in parchment paper. Mm-hmm. Put all my seasoning inside, my onions, my garlic, my I use Himalayan pink salt. And seal that up. And anybody can make this recipe. Seal it up with parchment paper. It keeps the grill clean, keeps all the juices inside the paper. And I'm 15 to 20 minutes. I'm sure everybody will love it.
Oh, that
sounds
delicious.
I don't normally give up my recipes, but I want to give you that one. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That sounds delicious. And those George Foreman grills are terrific. They are incredibly versatile. I mean, I was using when we were having our kitchen renovated years ago, and I was using one in what was, you know, substituting as our kitchen for those few weeks. And boy, you can make all sorts of stuff like that. And the parchment paper, John Shields, really does. There's a lot of possibilities with that, isn't there?
Oh, there are. I mean, it's unbelievable. And the way that it seals in the moisture and just and there's a number of kinds of fish that you could use with that would be just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Sash, what do
you
think?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank that gentleman for calling in, because parchment paper is a great thing to use. It seals in the juices. I hadn't even thought of it as a one pot, but, sir, you're correct. It does act as its own one pot. And talk about any of the flavor profiles I mentioned earlier. If you put a bed of vegetables and a little bit of wine and a fish on top and sealed it, that would be delicious. And your recipe, sir, sounded great. Thanks so much for calling in.
And Sash, what's the difference between putting something like in parchment paper as opposed to tinfoil? If you wrap it up, is there a difference? Does it matter?
I'm not sure. I think probably not. What do you think, John? I've used both. I use parchment paper more often.
The advantage of the parchment paper is it does not pick up the direct heat as much as the aluminum foil does. So it's almost like a slow cooker. It's baking the fish, but the aluminum foil gives you, do you understand? It's just picking up more of the heat.
Yeah.
And it's cooking the whatever you're cooking at a higher temperature. So the parchment works very well at slowing it down a little bit and keeping it nice and moist.
Parchment paper is a wonderful vehicle for this kind of cooking. It's delicious. I mean, it isn't delicious. Excuse me. The element it makes is delicious.
410-662-8780 is our number here on Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. I want to talk about chili. I think, you know, of course, it's hard to think about, you know, cold weather dishes when it's 70 degrees today. It's going to be 70 degrees tomorrow. We should be thinking about, you know, beach sandwiches or something. But, John, I mean, what's your secret when it comes to chili? That's a thing that I love making only because it makes the house smell so good for such a long time.
Well, I mean, I love chilies. I've been making a lot of turkey chili, and I even make a lot of veggie chilies, you know, with just some a bunch of chopped up vegetables, or I get some of the actual, you know, kind of crumbles, the veggie crumbles, and some beans and some barbecue sauce in there. And actually, I've done that quite a number of times in the slow cooker, and it goes all day, and you have a great meal, and you know. Again, it gives a beautiful aroma to the house. Sometimes I do it in the Dutch oven. It's a little too warm right now, but normally I have my wood stove going, and so I can take the cast iron Dutch oven and sit it on top of the wood stove, and the chili just cooks slow for, you know, for hours and hours, and it's amazing.
And you really can't sort of overcook it. That's the nice thing about it.
Yeah, that's right.
You can start it in the morning and just go for as ever long it takes you to do, and then take a nap, and then have people come over and eat dinner. Yeah, and some of the meals, Sasha, are you know, pretty classy, as we'd say, like beef bourguignon. Well, I mean, that's a recipe that a lot of people serve for special occasions, but you can do beef bourguignon as a one-pot thing.
Well, beef bourguignon, I just made it a few weeks ago for some people for a one-pot, and it is wonderful. I think the, again, it goes back to that procedure. This time, besides your olive oil, you're going to use a little bacon, which gives everything that special little zing, and then brown your meat. I used, and then I browned the vegetables, the carrots and onion and celery in some bacon fat as well, but it was a whole bottle of Cote de Rhone that went in there that was fantastic. And later, you know, I sautéed some cipollini onions. Don't you love that word?
Cipollini.
Is that sexy or is that not? Isn't that sexy, John? Cipollini. onions and mushrooms and put them on top. It was a gorgeous dinner, and I drank a lot of the Cote de Rhone to go with it.
There you go. Do you have a particular favorite thing, John, when it comes to, you know, beef or chicken or pork or fish? I mean, we've talked about all of these things, but we should. It seems that all of those things can work in a slow cooked, you know, Dutch oven, crock pot kind of way, right? There's nothing that doesn't work in that on a basic level.
No, they basically all will work, and I mean, you can do it as a, you know, a single kind of a dish, or you can do a combo thing. I mean, think about, you know, like the classic, a gumbo. You know, you're essentially taking a cast iron Dutch oven or something like that, making a nice brown, dark brown roux, and then throwing all the vegetables in, you know, the celery, the onions, and then wonderful spices, you know, cayenne pepper and everything like that. And then you can throw your meat in. You could put chicken in it. You could put beef in it. You can put shrimp in it. You can put whatever, lots of tomatoes in there, and Cajun spices. Put a lid on it, and sausage, some nice hot sausage
right
in there,
right,
and let that thing go, and you have an amazing one.
That's
pot
right.
that has everything in it: vegetables, meat, fish, and
absolutely.
Put it over a little rice, or add rice right into the pot.
A little touch of Nolan's right here in Balmer. Monica in Balmer. Speaking of Balmer, welcome to Midday with John Shields and Sasha Wohlhandler. Thanks for your call.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I don't know what this recipe is called, but a friend of mine made it up in Nova Scotia, and it's two cans of chickpeas, a can of 20-ounce diced tomatoes with Italian herbs, or you can add Italian herbs, garlic, a medium to large onion, four medium-sized potatoes, dice the potatoes up, put rinse off the chickpeas, put them in a pot, add a little bit of water so that there's a little bit of extra moisture, simmer for about 40 minutes, and you're done. And then you serve it in a bowl with some Parmesan cheese on top and a slice of bread or a nice baguette.
And you're good to go. Yeah.
And you're good to go. And it's filling, you're full.
That sounds delicious, Monica. Thank you very much. That's really great. Of course, up in Nova Scotia, Sasha, they know a lot about cold weather, and they know a lot about making stuff happen. And you know, as Monica says, doesn't have to have meat in it. The vegetarian stuff works just as well. That's terrific. Marie in Canton, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I have a question about cooking some venison roasts in crock pots. I've tried it twice, but it still comes out tough. And I've had it on for several hours, started high to get everything going quickly, and then turn it down to low and just let it sit for the day.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still coming out tough.
Comes out tough. John, what do you think?
Well, you know, that's one of the issues that I find always with the venison, because it's so lean. You know, it has such little fat in it. And often whenever you're cooking it for any, length, it will often, kind of get tough or a little dry on you. I mean, I've had venison like meatloaf before, where we ground the venison and then you can add some oil in it. You could put some olive oil in it or canola oil just to give it a little bit more moisture, and that works well there. Or, again, if you're going to braise it, or if you're doing it in a one pot, perhaps if you add a little bit more oil to the dish, it could be helpful, because otherwise the venison just by its nature, it dries out pretty easily.
All right. Well, John, we're going to make that the last word. John Shields is a chef, a television host, and an author. His restaurant, Gertrude's, is located at the BMA here in Baltimore. Sasha Wollhandler and Steve Susser run Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering on Charles Street in Baltimore. We'll have some of the recipes that we talked about today and links to more information on the web at wypr.org/midday. Thanks, Sasha. Thanks, John. I appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
Great day.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Sasha.
Thank you, John.
Coming up, theater critic J. Wynn Russick introduces us to Susan Rose. She's a Baltimore native who's made a splash on Broadway and in the movies. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.